We've done a little bit of talking about general porting, we've done our general setup, and now we're going to move into hardware. But before we jump in, we had some really good questions from the Q&A section, so I thought we'd answer a few of them.
Yep.
The first one that I saw was about Visual Studio as a plugin. So the question was, they were watching the videos from yesterday and said that you needed Visual Studio Pro in order to use Visual Studio as a plugin. And just to give a little clarification around that, what I'm getting from that is you're actually talking about the Visual or Unity VS, formerly known as Unity VS. It's now called Visual Studio Tools for Unity. And that's an actual plugin that'll allow you to debug and code directly in Visual Studio instead of using MonoDevelop. We're going to highlight that a little bit later on and just kind of mention it and talk a little bit more about it. But that's generally what I think you're getting at. And in that case, yes, you do need to have Unity Pro in order to be able to use that plugin.
Well, you need, so to use the, so when we had it, like, but we'll get ahead of it. The Unity BS was acquired by Microsoft. So Unity BS is this really great Unity editor plugin. That so it was a plugin for the editor only, where you were allowed to integrate seamlessly so that you could use Visual Studio as your code editor and as your debugger, very much like you use MonoDevelop today. And it used to be like $80. It was a pretty popular plugin, so it was very handy. It was very effective for people. And then about 3 months ago, Microsoft acquired Unity BS, and we've done two things so far. We have renamed it. Is now called Visual Studio Tools for Unity. And then we have also made it free. So that's a great thing. Now, the part that you need there is, because again, we're still in the acquisition. Before Unity BS was a feature that could only be used when you had Visual Studio Pro, because we have our different SKUs for Visual Studio. We have the Express SKUs, which does not allow you to have plugins in Visual Studio because it's free. And then the Pro SKUs and all the SKUs above that, like Ultimate and all the other ones, allow you to have plugins. So right now we have acquired Unity VS, we have made it free. And unfortunately, because we're in the same like release cycle and everything else, it's still Visual Studio Pro only. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, we do have a 90-day eval of Visual Studio, so feel free to just use the 90-day eval of Visual Studio Pro.
And we'll talk a little bit more about our BizSpark and our DreamSpark program for for others to get it for free. But yeah, I highly recommend using Unity VS or Visual Studio Tools for Unity now. I've used it in the past. It's really speeds up my coding process. You get IntelliSense, you can debug right inside there. Visual Studio's got probably arguably one of the best debuggers on the market, right?
Yep.
So it's very, very powerful and very easy to use. So yes, definitely check it out if you're interested in coding inside of Visual Studio.
Yep.
Another one that we had was about an achievement system. They asked us to go a little bit deeper, and they were wondering if there's some things in the back end that we're doing. So I'm guessing they're interested in the achievement system. So back in the day when we had Windows Phone 7, you had Xbox Live achievements and stuff like that. Can you elaborate a little bit about what we have going there?
Yes. So so today, first of all, Xbox Live as an API still exists. So if you have what I would call a really nice game, because Xbox Live is a program that you can join, studios can join and actually submit and publish through Microsoft Studios, and you get into a business relationship. So so the reality is that it's not available to everybody. If you're a student, this is your first game, et cetera, it's unlikely that you're going to get into Xbox Live, into the Xbox Live program. So the APIs for achievements are still there, and that's one thing that's available there. The other one is that, there's third parties, vendors out there that have really great solutions. For example, KumaCore, mm-hmm. They have a good solution that gives you achievements and leaderboards, et cetera. So pretty much any cloud service that gives you gaming services, you should be able to access from within Unity, because most of them are just using REST APIs. So KumaCore is one that I use often on our side. They're working their Unity plugin, and it's really easy to work. It's really easy to integrate, and people are successfully kind of creating the right functionality. the last thing that we've done also is obviously Microsoft has Azure. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we don't have like high-level gaming services like we do with Xbox Live, where you get achievements and lobbies and all the higher-level stuff. But if you just want to throw a leaderboard together very quickly, we do have plugins that you can use to connect to Azure. You can get table storage and just literally drop everything to a table and, you know, effectively create a leaderboard. We even ship some.
That's how I've done all my leaderboards on all my, and it's cross-platform too, which is really nice because you're using Azure and you have the ability to use it on iOS and Android. So all of my leaderboards are all cross-platform. So you're competing across all the platforms.
It's really nice. Exactly. And we need, you know, depending on how much usage, et cetera, it can be free or it can be very inexpensive. And, you know, we give you, we also give you samples. So a year and a half ago, and maybe when we go back, we'll send the link to Chris, who's going to post these videos and the sessions. But if not, just go look. You know, Unity, Windows has samples. So if you go into the Windows samples in dev.windows.com, look for samples and you do a search for Azure leaderboard. And, you know, 2 years ago, we had interns come in and write Azure leaderboards.
I think I might have been one of those interns.
Yeah, so we had people write them and the source code is out there. So it's a quick way to get started up and running very quickly if you want leaderboards.
Yeah, and shameless plug, if you check out wootstudio.ca, not .com.ca, I actually got a couple blog posts on there on how I built mobile services for Android, iOS, and Windows Phone.
Yep. So yeah, great references. It's not that hard to do it all. So so you can do all that if you want.
So basically, the answer there, and just we talked a little bit about there going back. Basically, there is no high level like how it was on the Xbox. There's nothing like that. You don't have like the leaderboards and stuff like that. But you can roll your own again, and you know, using things like Azure and that actually opens it up. So it's not just for our platform; it's for every platform.
Yep. Yeah. And I would caveat it with today, there is no high level.
Yes, yes.
You know, the Xbox Live exists. It's just that it's a program that is not open to everybody. But, you know, it's clearly something we got to be looking at.
Yeah, definitely. And so one last question before we jump into hardware, and this one's kind of about hardware, so I thought it kind of fit perfectly. We showed off how to use the sensors in the emulator. We have a question. Can I test the move sensor? So I'm guessing they want to know, can you use the gyroscope inside of the emulator? Can you show that off?
Yeah, actually, it's coming up.
Is it coming up?
You beat me by 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. During the break, he was trying to download a game that I had built previously that actually shows this.
Yep. So, and you're probably better at showing this because for context, just so people understand it, a lot of the demos are on my side of the machine. We, in our setup, we tested this last Friday. Everything worked, two machines, everything. Today, we had a connectivity problem. So all our demos are here. And this is actually a game that you wrote, Mickey, and that you know, like we used for the last training. And so it's just coming up. Let me see if I can project. I just launched it, and
yeah,
I come back here.
You're projecting now. Yep. So you know, there is a little error there. This was written about a year ago, so the code might be a little bit dated.
Yep.
But basically, what happens is you can control the sumos by accelerometer. So if you were holding the device in your hand, you could actually move the sumo forward by moving them forward, and stuff like that.
So
it's going to be a little hard to demo it.
If I'm not timed?
Just, yeah, hit clear and then hit it again. Just tap on the screen. There you go. So he's moving already because the accelerometer is giving him some input of -1 on the Y. So if you look down there, it says -1 Y.
Yep.
So you're already giving it negative input on the Y. And because of the way it's set up, Y is actually going to and from the camera because you've got it tilted. So
you can see here, I'm tilting it. So to go back to the person's, I'm just not getting the timing right. But I'm tilting the accelerometer here, and the values are changing.
Yeah.
So if anybody's testing their game, you can do that.
Yeah, you can test all the accelerometer there. And what's a really cool feature about this is you don't have to actually do it all by hand. You can pre-record data and then play it back.
Yep.
So if you look at the recorded data there.
So I'm going to crisp play, and then I'm going to shake real quick, see if I get the timing right. Play and shake. See? There we go.
You moved a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they danced a little bit. So I can go back there. You'll see it right here if I'm fast enough. This is actually a shake gesture that you know has been pre-recorded, and these actually
there's a few in there.
The emulator comes with you know with a pre-recorded gesture, and you can record your own if you want to. And again, if I'm moving these around right here, I would be able to do it. I just haven't managed to get the right balance there. But I'll go back here. I'll go there, and I'll shake it very quickly, and you see how they dance a little bit.
Yeah, you did a little jitter there. Yeah.
Yep. So that's, yeah, there's a lot of power with regards to the accelerometer and sensors. Same thing for network throttling. There's a lot of knobs that you can
play around with. So that's really cool. That's some really cool stuff.
Yep. And by the way, this is github.com/scruffyfern.
Yeah, so that's my general dump spot for all my code. So anything, any demos that you see or, you know, you hear us talk about, if you're looking for code, that's a good place to head over.
Yep.
Constantly updating it and taking feedback. So if you see anything, if there's an issue with something or you see a feature that I should have added, just reach out, let me know, and we'll get it in there.
Yep. This has all the features, like light up features that we are, today we're going to cover the, here's how you go really under the engine and do light up. Because yesterday at the MBA yesterday, they cover a lot of the, here's how you share, here's how you do something specific. Mm-hmm. But I know your game, if you're looking for source code, this game has it all, so you can just go download.
Yeah, so we in that one, we actually set it up so that when you get a high score and you beat your previous high score, it automatically uses the share charm to share it out via whatever you have enabled, right? Twitter, yep. Facebook, whatever. So the code's all there. It's very easy to use and all very well documented for the most part.
Yep. So go download it. I will make sure we include a link so that you can get it. And if you're on Twitter or the Q&A, just
I'll post it in the Q&A later as well. Yeah, definitely.
Good.
So let's move on to hardware.
Yep.
Let's talk about the.
Well, that was hardware.
That was hardware, kind of. Yes, very true.
So.
So I guess the first thing we want to talk about is the Windows Phone hardware.
Yeah. So again. If you're porting your game across platforms, you gotta understand what hardware, what you can expect. And I think on Windows Phone, we had we began with a very interesting philosophy. And you know, as we've seen demand, as we've listened to customers, it's changed a little bit. But it's still the core philosophy was there. And here's kind of how we started. With Windows Phone, we wanted to make sure that we didn't create this over-fragmented space where there was all kinds of hardware, all kinds of really crazy configurations that made it impossible for developers to target Windows. So what we've done is we have this concept, we began with this concept called a chassis, where we said, we're going to have these hardware specifications, and every OEM or every phone manufacturer is going to adhere to it, and that way developers have some sort of consistency. And obviously, as we've gone over time and hardware has evolved and people want, variety or more choices, it's evolved and it's getting a little bit broader. But in the end, the principle there is that our hardware is very consistent. This happens on Windows. On Windows, we have thousands of different models from many different OEMs, et cetera. But in the end, the APIs abstract all that hardware. We make sure it's all DirectX. We make sure it's all the same multi-touch and everything. So you end up with a nice abstraction. And here's what you can get out of phone, or what you should expect out of phone, I guess. So first of all of our phones have a Snapdragon CPU or dual core. That's the minimum bar. Obviously, there's faster ones.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. You're actually, what we're talking about here is the minimum requirements in order for it to be considered a Windows phone.
Yep, exactly.
You are guaranteed pretty much to have this.
Yep, exactly. Here you're guaranteed. So when the ones that have only one option, this is your min bar. And then there's obviously a few that have multiple options. So you're guaranteed to have DirectX level 9.3. So if you're a graphic, somebody asked earlier, how many triangles can I get out of these? We have DirectX level 9.3 capable hardware. For context, if you want to put it into context, that's Xbox 360.
Yeah, it's basically you can say it runs the same shader languages and versions as the Xbox 360.
Exactly. So it's you should be able to do a lot with it, and you see people doing a lot with it. On memory, we have today we have three different configurations. We do have a lower end phone that has 512 meg of memory. We have 1 gigabyte, which is kind of a mid-range. And then lately, or over the last 6 months, we started seeing phones with 2 gigabyte of memory. The 1020, which has that 41 megapixel camera, has 2 gigabytes of memory because it needs it for, it can take advantage of it for the pictures. When you're getting that huge picture in there, it's easy for us to process the memory. 1520, 930. They're all starting to come out with 2 gigabytes. So we will continue.
There's one thing I want to mention there, though, because you see 512 and you're thinking, well, that's not that bad. 512 is pretty good. But you're not getting access to the full 512, right?
Yep, exactly. And we'll cover that. We have memory is going to be our,
we have a whole section.
Here's everything here that you have to learn.
So, okay, so we'll come back to that. But
yep, so we'll get there. And then on resolutions, mostly what you should expect, like you see a myriad of resolutions, but the one trend that you can get out of here is if you looked at it, it's 16 by 9 or 16 by 10. So that is the one thing, whereas the aspect ratio, what we find out is the aspect ratio is more interesting to people than the resolution.
Yeah.
So on that side, the lower end devices are 800 by 480, and that's also our older devices. That's where we started. But now we're all the way to 1080p. Mm-hmm. So with regards to sensors, actually, all of the Windows phones will have an accelerometer, a light sensor, and a proximity sensor. And then optional for the higher end ones, which is most of the phones, like anything that's in the mid range or high range will have gyro or a magnetometer.
So one thing I'll point out there is if you're going to use something like gyro or magnetometer, make sure you're checking that they're
yep, exactly.
And we're going to get into the capabilities in a second, but what's cool about it is if I have a game that requires me to have a gyro and I put that in as my capabilities, it's only going to target the people that have that phone. We're only going to be able to see it. So I'm not going to end up with people that can't use my game downloading it, right? So that's one really cool feature.
Yep. So here's the capabilities light. And what we do here is very similar to other platforms, right? This is something, a configuration option in Visual Studio. It's not even an option. It's something you should go configure in Visual Studio. And what it is you declare what capabilities you want for your application. And capabilities can be software or hardware driven. So for example, if you want access to the contacts database or if you want access to camera, these are both capabilities. And you can just go in there and declare them. And this is a really nice thing because let's say I go download his sumo blocks and I see that he's wanting access to my contacts database. Looking at Mickey, I'll be like, no way, right? So that's where the user can come in and say, here's what, I understand the capabilities, I know how these map, and then you as a developer should just declare them and go do that. A good tip, I think Mickey was highlighting this, if you don't declare the capability, the API is just gonna fail.
Yeah.
So sometimes you'll be like, oh, why is the camera not coming up? And you forgot to turn on the capability. You don't get it depends on which capability you're turning on, but in some cases they just fail. And if you don't,
you'll spend a bunch of time debugging it and you'll realize that you didn't have a capability set. But yeah, back to the point that I was making there though, is like, I've seen this on different stores. I won't name stores, but I've seen this where you'll go and download a game and you'll go to run it on your device and it won't work. Right, and it's maybe because it had a capability or something set, and then all of a sudden you start reading the reviews, and people are just trashing the games. Well, the good thing is here, if my game requires the gyroscope, and I set gyroscopes, only people that have that enabled on their device are actually going to be able to see my game and download it. So they're not going to trash me in the store because they downloaded a game that doesn't work on their device. So that's a huge plus.
Yep. And later, when we talk about store, we'll talk about trial, which is another way to get around those kinds of problems. Because even, in some cases, you do require a capability or you require a specific, you expect specific performance in some games or something like that. And even though you don't have a capability to require, in some cases, some people might not like your game. They'll feel like, hey, it lags too much on my lower end device, et cetera. So trials would be a good best practice.
That,
That's after launch, so stick around for that one. Come back after launch and we'll get there.
Awesome. So I guess we're going to move on to the back button.
Yep. So Windows Phone has a back button. All Windows Phones have a back button. And this is something that everybody that's targeting Windows Phone should be aware of because it is one of our certification requirements that you handle the back button. There's a very specific set of rules that said, look, if you're on the main in your landing page for your game, somebody clicks the button, the application should exit. And if you are somewhere else where you have a model dialogue or something, the application should just dismiss it. The nice thing about this is that Unity handles it for you. If you, Android has a back button and, the way Unity handle it on Android is you listen for key code escape and then, you react.
It's the exact equivalent of listening for the keyboard escape key.
Yep.
And to your point there, like the general rules are if you're in a menu system, like at the very beginning of the game, you fire up your menu and you hit the back button, exit the game. Now, if I'm actually in a dialogue, so I'm talking to an NPC and walking around the world, I hit the back button, it shouldn't exit the game. It should just exit that dialogue and go back to a previous dialogue.
Yep.
And same thing as traversing menu systems. If I'm on the main menu, I click settings, I'm in settings, I click the back button, it shouldn't exit the game. It shouldn't go anywhere but back to the main menu, right? So make sure that it's you're following the stack, so to speak, and making sure that you back up on the stack the proper way.
Exactly. And again, this is a certification check. So make sure you do it. Otherwise, you'll fail certification the first time. If you want to look at code, there's nothing exciting in the code. But it does show you, actually, if I look at this code, it does show you one point that we often like to make. It shows you how things are connected, right? So our host application is, you know, we talked about this XAML earlier, and it's this page that hosts that swap chain panel that we talked about earlier. And you can see how Unity actually writes all the code for you, where Unity is listening for the back heap press event. And then when that happens, they, you know, communicate back onto their framework. And then to you, this shows up as in, you know, in your update loop, you just check for get key down and with escape. And then if you want to exit, you can go ahead and say application.quit. If you need to dismiss the menu or something like that, you handle it there. And that's how you handle the back buttons.
Yeah, and that's pretty much anybody that's ever done any event-driven handling understands what that is. It's basically just an event handler that's waiting. Did I press the back button? Yes. If so, call this code.
Yep, exactly. The next one that you have to look at is keyboard. And Unity, starting with 4.5, they've added some really good keyboard support. This was one of the features that was harder for them to get through, so it came a little bit later. Again, if you're using 4.5.3, you're ready for it. And what Unity has is seamless keyboard support if you're using GUI. This is the old GUI system, not their new UI system that's coming in 4.6. If you were using that before, the support is already there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as a new UI system comes up in 4.6, they're going to have support. If you want programmatic access, then use the touchscreen keyboard class. And I highlighted two things that we've shipped back and forth. So the first one is touchscreen keyboard class has a bunch of properties. One of them is the area, so that you know what area is being covered. And on Windows, they don't get the right size for the area, so it just doesn't work or it's not supported. You'll get 0/0 if you try to figure out the area. Just assume. You can check if the keyboard is showing and then assume that you're partially obscured if the keyboard is showing. And then there used to be a setting where in phone or in Windows where we used to have said keyboard door active after we instantiated touchscreen keyboard. That's no longer required as of 4.5.3. They fixed that bug. But I used to have a line that says this is required. So now we're just telling people, hey, you no longer need that line. Moving on to memory, as you know, Mickey already said, this is one of those areas where people come into Windows. We want to make sure you're super careful, and we want to make sure you do great support. The first thing is you should understand, like for example, 520, the Nokia 520 was one of the best-selling phones on any platform for many months last year. Like they were selling, you know, in countries they were selling more than Android. So it was one of the best-selling phones out there. $49 contract unlocked outside of the U.S. That's a really big deal. Like a lot of people in developing countries are using it.
Well, I picked one up for development purposes, right? Being the lower end device.
Yep, exactly. So and what happens there is that one has 512 meg of memory. And here's how Microsoft or Windows handles the memory. If you're running on Windows Phone 8, actually, it doesn't make that big of a difference on 8.1. But so pretty much, when it's a 512 meg device, we give your application 180 meg. So we are like, okay, we want to make sure you don't go over 180, because if you go over 180, then the operating system starts to suffer, or maybe we don't pick up a call, or there's other tasks that need to happen that you might care about. So we kind of make sure we limit your memory there. And that's what the operating system gives you, to make sure that we're always running as a good phone. So you need to make sure of that, because when you hit 180, the operating system is going to shut you down. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you'll get out-of-memory exceptions, and then you're likely going to,
if you throw an out-of-memory exception, you're pretty much dead in the water there.
Yeah. You're not going to be able to recover. If you manage to recover from a few of those and the memory keeps going, at some point it just automatically shuts you down. So it's something that you need to know. Now, some people might not be able to have their game fit on their, you know, in 180. And there what we do is we give you manifest settings such that you can say, oh, here's how I want to handle. For example, these ID func cap extend memory pretty much says, I want to be in the 180 range. That's kind of the default that you're going to run into. Now, if you can go in there and say ID rec memory 300, you can put this on your manifest. And again, there's a visual editor for the manifest, so you don't have to remember all this manually. And then what that's going to do is it's going to actually opt out of those low memory devices. So that means if Mickey goes to our store in the his 512 Nokia 520, he won't see your game because you opted out of that. So that's a good thing because Mickey's not going to download it and have a bad experience. But it's a bad thing because you just left a very large number of users out of your market. So we highly, highly recommend that you make 512 megabyte support work. And that's why we're probably going to spend the next 10 minutes talking about tips
how to get that happen. Yeah.
Now, those were the settings and the manifest settings for Windows Phone 8. On Windows Phone 8.1, as we move to Universal, we actually changed it to be a little bit more, you know, intuitive. Min device memory is the new setting. So do a search for any of these or click on the link that we have on the PowerPoint and you'll be able to see that. So that's kind of what you need to know with regards to memory. Now, some memory tips and tricks that we have. The first one is always test on low memory devices. Many times I've been called by somebody who said, I don't get it. My game is not that advanced and I'm taking 180 megabytes of memory. And then I asked them, what are you running on? They said 1520. And I'm like, you know what? The garbage collector is sleeping. Because the garbage collector will only run if you need it to run. Mm-hmm. So if you know our garbage collector will not collect anything until it has to. So if you're running, if you're testing on a high memory device and you're measuring memory, we might not run and you'll be getting the wrong measure. It could be that you're not using that much, we're just not collecting it. So always test on low memory devices. Some of you are gonna tell me, well, I don't wanna buy one of those. Great, use the emulator, right? That's why we give you the emulator. The emulator has the configuration, so use that. If you want to get an idea on your memory, the Unity Profiler is a really easy way for you to just keep an eye on memory.
Yeah, it's very powerful,
the
too.
The Profiler is very powerful, and it's the easiest, one of the easiest, the one that people coming from different platforms are going to be most familiar with. Later on, we'll talk about the Windows tools, because once you're in the Windows world, you get the power of Access or XPerf or other Visual Studio tools we're going to show you in the optimization section. So there will be more tools than that, but if you want to, then it's just easy enough. I loved it. Tad Bidas from Unity did a session at Unite, and he called it the low budget, option for profile in Unity, and then he showed XPerf and some of those tools in there because the profiler is a Unity Pro feature. So if you don't have that, you can definitely go use the XPerf tools. Two of the common gotchas that we see with memory are texture compression. So definitely if you're going to target low memory devices, just make sure that your textures are being compressed. And for that, you can go into, whenever you have a texture, go into the advanced settings, click on the settings, click on advanced, and then go in there and change texture compression.
I'd go one step further and say always compress your textures. It doesn't matter what device you're running on, really.
Yeah, you should. Because that helps with size. It helps with a couple other things regardless, right? Because download size.
I was going to say download size matters.
Yeah. So, but just make sure that you're compressed there. And then the last one, which this one is a slight shift from the way we do Unity games a lot. If you want to save a little bit of memory on audio, then just do the stream from disk, which again, like a lot of the times for my Unity games, for certain things that are like long running background sounds, et cetera, sometimes we're like, compressed in memory, or stream from disk is a good option. Some things like little sprites,
fire. Yeah, like a jump sound or something. You're not going to.
We were like, do I really keep it in memory or not? So that was an option that in some cases in Unity you have. On our side, just go back and look at your audio and see which one makes sense. Streaming from disk does save on memory. If you're trying to squeeze that 1 megabyte that at the end, that's usually one that you can look at. Here's the option on texture compressions, just so you see it. It's just going to any textures, look at texture type, click advanced, and then from there you'll see the compression as one of the options.
Yeah, and the big part here is the alpha channel, right? Depending on what you're doing there, if you need full alpha support, then you want to go DXT5. If not,
exactly.
Then you can get away with DXT1.
Yep.
It really depends on what the image is, right, and what the sprite is.
Yep. And you'll see it. With DXT1, you get 8x compression often. With DXT5, you still get half of that. So both of them are pretty significant. And you usually don't suffer much from going DXT5. We have some great blog post by Chuck that I pointed to earlier that talks about textures and compressions. So you can map it. The one thing that you'll run into too is we kind of renamed it. We went from DXTs, which was the old way of calling it in the old DirectX 9 world, and then we moved to BCs. So DXT1 became BC1, and then DXT5 is kind of a BC3 equivalent. So as you look at block compression, this blog post will walk you through it, and you'll be able to get the most out of it. If you're doing runtime stuff and you want to check, hey, how much memory am I using? Like, just so you know, like, for example, in some cases, we're working on a game right now where we need to take some screenshots, and there, you know, in some cases, you can be at a place where, like, if you run the tutorial and you finish 3 races or whatever, like, you know, we might need to save a little bit of memory, and us giving you the option to not take a screenshot at a specific point can save us 5 megabytes to make sure we never go over. We give you a runtime APIs. These are runtime APIs, not debugging APIs that you can use within your app to make sure you know, number one is how much total memory you have. Number two, how much, you know, your current memory use is, so that you kind of plan again, and then you get your peak memory usage too. So these are runtime APIs you can use to keep an eye and enable.
Yeah, like if you're worried and you're hitting that point where you're almost always going over, it might be a good idea to put some catches in there for that, right? And check and like, oh, I am running out of memory. Maybe I should delete X or, you know.
Yep, exactly. With regards to memory tooling, you're running on Windows, debugging on Windows, so all of the Windows technologies are going to start to apply. These ones, again, you're going to see them on the tooling section in the afternoon after lunch. A few of them you're going to see. But if you're running a Windows Store app, Task Manager, right? Control-Alt-Delete, see how much memory you have. Memory is not a problem on Windows Store at all. We don't limit it, we don't throttle it, we don't have a problem there. So for Windows, you shouldn't have to. But in some cases, like for example, I do these a lot. I write universal games, and then what I do is I troubleshoot memory on Windows just because it's easier. I have great tooling with XPerf and a few other things like Visual Studio Diagnostics. That one you can use on phone too. But I just, you know, I find it more convenient to troubleshoot some of those things there or to validate my compression on certain things there and then just move back and forth. Mm-hmm. And again, the Unity Profiler, it can support phone and Windows. If you have Unity Pro, it's there and you should be able to do that. If you're dealing with memory, something you also need to know is asset bundles. Asset bundle is kind of a double-edged sword. In some cases, we use asset bundles, or people use asset bundles to keep their assets clean, organized, etc. That's the best practice there. On Windows Phone, if you're trying to use asset bundles to squeeze some memory, maybe doing multiple resolution packages where you have one bundle for high res, one bundle for low res, it can happen. It can help you, and that way it saves you a little bit of memory. It saves you performance from having to uncompress too big of a bundle, etc.
Yeah, I've used it on the PC side of things more, where I'd have like the low, medium, high settings for my graphics.
Exactly.
And that's how I was doing that. I was using asset bundles to create like low level graphics that I would display if it was a lower graphics card or whatever, and then I would just move up. And that's it's a great way to save memory, and it does organize your programs a lot better.
Yep. And the caveat with Unity on Windows Phone is that once you chunk into asset bundles, the bundles cannot be unloaded. Once you load it, there's no, like, the API to unload the bundle just isn't no-op. It doesn't truly unload it. And this has to do with the way we manage device context. And, you know, if you're in a scene where you can call asset bundle unload, but if we know that we still needed assets from there because it's loaded in a device context, it just becomes a no-op. So make sure you plan with, oh, here's how my bundles are going to be. Make sure you chunk them the right way. And if you're looking for memory, you can go back and make sure that that's working seamlessly for you. Audio, and this goes beyond memory. And by the way, we emphasize 512 meg a lot because we want you to support 512. And also, I think I emphasize it a lot because I tend to work on the highest end games on the store. So I'm used to people that are like, oh, they come from iOS and they had memory problems on iOS. And then when they come to Windows, they're like, oh, the memory of the 180 limit, it's a little bit more harsh. So that's why we emphasize it. But 90% of the people watching this will probably never have a memory problem. So we're giving you all the details, but don't panic. Make sure you go measure first because you'll be surprised like how much fits. Unity is very effective and they do a lot of texture loading and unloading. They do a lot of optimizations behind the scenes where you might not need it. We're just telling you, hey, watch out for this, and we're giving you all the tools because that 5% or whatever it is that needs it, we want to make sure that you're armed with the right tools. That 95% might not need it, and don't panic. So moving away from memory a little bit, onto audio, one of the things that we have going on, and this is a gotcha that we actually, like, it's just something we've learned to accept. With Unity, with the way they profile, with the way they inject code into their the development builds, when you play your game in a phone, most likely you're running debug. You have 50-50 chance that your audio is going to just crackle. It's going to be like, it's not going to sound good. And you're going to be like, what happened? Right, like, this is great audio, I know it worked, I know the format support, et cetera. So when you're running in Unity, and if you have an audio, if your audio is not sounding right, make sure you retry master. And it might be something where, like, literally you're gonna be like turning the volume down on your game because you need to be on debug, but the audio is not sounding great, but you know that it sounds great on master. It just has to do with how much work they're doing to debug, how they're tracking, and all the other stuff. And it's just something we've kind of learned.
Yeah, when you're doing all the debug steps and you got the processing of the audio on top of that, all of a sudden you kind of start to run out of room, right? And
exactly.
You will get little things. I've had it happen very infrequently, though. It's not too often that I actually see it come out.
Yep. Test on devices, it's the next one, right? The emulator is not representative of your audio. So if it doesn't sound right again, just make sure you test on devices. If you want to look at the codecs we support, which we would support most of what you expect, and Unity abstracts a little bit of that for you, there's a link here where you can go back and say, oh, here's what we're looking at. Now, we're not going to dive deep into touch, Microsoft, gyro, webcam, and location. And the reason we are not going to do that is only because that works seamless the way you would expect, like, you know, touch and microphone and gyro are, you know, exactly what you expect out of Unity. You shouldn't have to touch your games and make changes to
be able to. If you've got input.accelerometer for your iOS build, it's going to work for the Windows build.
Exactly. Right. So we're not going to dive in, but they work, they're supported and everything else. So just giving you the full thing there. Aspect ratios, we already hinted at this as we talked about earlier in the phone slide. We have mostly a 16:9 or 16:9 and, you know, sometimes a 16:10 aspect ratio. Most of our apps are full screen, or actually phone and Windows apps by default kind of run full screens. There's sometimes when phone apps get obscured, but you'll have events to handle that and you wouldn't have to do anything there. So for the most part, if your game was designed to be portable, you're not going to have any problems dealing with a resolution.
It goes back to the plan ahead, right? If you're building in Unity, you pretty much know you're going cross-platform. So start thinking about that at the beginning.
Yep.
And then you won't have these headaches as you get down the road, right?
Yep, exactly. With regards to input, I always show both on screen because I want you to think about universal app and talk about input as you go both ways. So with regards to input on the phone, you'll have the transparent touch accelerometer, you'll have camera, microphone, and obviously you still have the back button, which I consider part of input because it kind of drives your navigation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I highlight that, hey, there's overlap with Windows Store. In some cases, Windows Store might have touch, keyboard, et cetera. So if you think about universal app, think of them cohesively. If you want to optimize for one or the other, maybe, for example, add controller onto Windows, that's great. You can do that, no problem. Again, Unity abstracts a lot of these, so you shouldn't have a problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, Unity does a really good job with their input processing, and the fact that, you know, like, I've done it numerous times where I'll build a Windows Phone game, and I know I'm going to bring it to Windows Store, so I just write in the keyboard and mouse code anyway. I know it's going to work, and then
exactly.
I have no problems there. They've done a really good job with the input system.
Yep, and that's what we would recommend. Just write one universal game that handles both, and you'll be okay. Moving on to the hardware on Windows, we're gonna run fairly fast through a lot of the same options, so you kind of see some of what we have and what you need to know. On the graphics side, these Windows actually goes down to DirectX level 9.1.
Okay.
And the reason we do that is for the Surface RT devices. So those tend to be 9.1. So you will see a little bit of the 9.1 devices there. It's a small market share, but it's one that you should look at. For the most part, 9.1 and 9.3 are fairly close. So you shouldn't have a lot of differences.
Not too many differences there.
Right. Now, Windows takes it all the way to DirectX 11. So that's the one area where you will see performance optimizations, you will see improvements, you will see Uni taking advantage of certain things. For the most part, this should be transparent, but we just want to make sure you know that, Windows has the whole gamut of devices. Obviously, Windows is still the largest desktop, operating system out there. There's millions of devices, thousands of models, et cetera. So we have the whole gamut.
And if you're looking to see what the specific levels are, in the break, we'll get up a post up there from MSDN that actually explains what each level has.
Yep.
For you.
So there's we have a nice table that walks you through every, for context, the way I always look at it is you're looking at the minimum bar across the board is shader model 2, because that's what
that's,
tends to get
people. That's pretty fair to say.
Yep. On Windows, with regards to resolution, we can be all over the place. Number one is, there's too much hardware out there. And number two, Windows supports screen resizing and multitasking, so your game can be resized to resolution as low as 320 by 768.
Yeah, that's basically what I always say, is expect that the lowest you're ever going to go down to is 320 by 768. And if you have something there that supports that, if your graphics are able to support that, then you're fine, right?
Yep. So, and we'll talk about that. And then input, with Windows, you have to think about the myriad of input, right? We have input, we have mouse, we have touch, we have, your Xbox controller. So there's a lot more options there. Some things for people to know, mouse and touch is transparent. Windows at the platform level, we do something where we merge mouse and touch for you. So this is a platform level feature where, you should not have to code for one over the other, but if you want to, like if you're coding to touch and the user is using mouse, that will work seamless.
Yeah, basically it's the single touch. Like if you're only doing like a single touch on something like on a menu or something like that, you can basically handle it like a mouse input. It's when you get into the multi-touch that you need to start doing some extra stuff.
Yep, and then one thing to look at Windows, obviously there's a lot of tablet devices out there, so the way I think about it is that sensors are optional. If you look at, for example, a Surface RT, you'll have a light sensor, accelerometer, gyro, and compass, but obviously if you have an Asus tablet or a Lenovo tablet or a Lenovo laptop or something, you'll be running the Windows Store app and you won't have all of those. So keyboard and mouse will matter more. So it's just something for you to look at and think about. Windows has the exact same concept of capabilities. We discussed this on Windows Phone, so I'm not going to dive into it too much. With regards to aspect ratio and resolution, on Windows, plan for any aspect ratio. That is something you got to look at. For example, portrait, if you have a game that's designed for mobile or phone, and it's portrait only, you got to think about the fact that, certain laptops are going to have to... they will be on landscape, most of the time, or they cannot turn around to portrait. So just make sure you plan for your game. Maybe put the two pillars on the side and make sure that you're...
The old arcade cabinet style with some cool graphics down the side, yeah.
Yep. So with regards to screen resizing, again, we already mentioned it. We go down to 320 by 768. So the one piece of feedback that I give you is passing your game is okay. You can decide, my game is going to resize down to... The way I think about it, if I was to give you the advice to be a really great game, figure out if you can resize down to 500 by 768. 500 is what we use in Windows 8.1. That's kind of a magic number where people can still share, have three screens or three different applications on their Windows desktop and still see something at 500. If you cannot, just pass your game. It's okay. Right, but that's that break point where I would say you can fit it to 500. Some games do, and that's great. You will always be full pillar, at least for now, and as of 8.1, you're always kind of full pillar. So you always have 768, the minimum resolution on the height. And obviously, like if I'm running 1080p, that becomes 320 by... the equivalent of 320 by 1080.
Yeah. Why don't you actually show them the desktop? Show them what you're talking about when you're actually resizing.
Yes.
And while you're doing that, I'm just going to mention, one thing that I usually tell developers, because they're always saying to me, pausing my game's okay, that's fine, but is there anything else I can do in that experience? So I've seen a couple of games do some really cool stuff where if they get resized to that small pillar there, they'll actually change to a mini game. Right, so it's like a game within a game, or like if you have an RPG, maybe when you get resized like that, all of a sudden you just put up the quest log, or something along those lines. There's a lot of things you can do to really give that cool feeling that, and not just pause the game. And if you do pause the game, when you resize it back to normal, allow the user some sort of input to unpause it.
Yep.
Don't just unpause it when it comes back to the full size. I've seen a lot of people do that, and it's quite annoying, right? When you resize it and, maybe you're driving off a cliff because you didn't have a chance to get any input in there. So make sure you give them a little bit of a break so that they can actually have some sort of input before you go right back in.
Yeah, so here, for example, to go back and show you, here we have kind of a Unity game. It's Mini Moto Racing. It's one that I knew I had installed in this box. And these games right here, it's obviously right now taking the full screen. We're low resolution, we're 1366 by 768 in order to project. And you can see here with multitasking, I can, for example, bring a window and then they get split in half and half. I can actually do this multiple times. That's why the 500 matters, because Windows has that. If there's not 500, then you can no longer multitask. So if I look at it on 1080p, I can have four kind of blocks of applications. And you can see here how they're taking the full height of the screen. And you can see here I can get down onto a specific time. And this is probably a bad example because I wasn't playing to begin with. But you can see here, like at some point, they'll just start resizing and then I just let it go.
The thing there, though, like that I notice is when you're resizing it, this is actually a good example of what you don't want to have happen. As you resize it, you're having your menu not fill properly, right? So as you resize it, you should do a check to actually put the buttons in the right spot in that aspect ratio.
Yep. So they probably do it right once I start. Let's see. But I wasn't set up to. This is one of our lab machines. I'm running Threshold on my day job, so I lost my mouse somehow. And lost cursor. So doing this over remote.
Yeah,
stuff
it
is
can
not
be
easy,
a little tricky. Yeah.
Just because I can't get to the edges.
But you've given them the general idea of what we're talking about. I just wanted people, because a lot of people might not have experienced that changing the screen sizes and stuff, especially when it comes to video games. Generally, you're not grabbing a video game and resizing it every few minutes, but we want to let you know you need to support that, you need to accept that, and make sure that you're doing it in a way that fits your game.
Yep. And the one thing you need to know, Windows, obviously with Windows, with phone it's easy because it's full screen, and you know, like when you get obscure is that a call came in and you were obscure for a minute and there's not much you can do. With Windows, obviously with the Windows resizing so much, we do give you an event. Unity has this little wrapper actually where in Unity Engine, WSA is the namespace that they use, and they have an application, Windows Eyes Event, that from within Unity, you can actually just listen to that event. And that way, as the window is getting resized, you would be called.
Much like the way we have the back button set up. So you would put your call in your XAML code, your front-end code, and then you would have this this code written in your actual game code, and it just fires off the event handler whenever it gets resized.
Yep, exactly. And here, my game controller would be paused if I go under 500, and that was the minimum size I was supporting. So very, very straightforward for you to just handle screen sizing, but it's definitely something you should do. So that's kind of where we're at with regards to screen.
I would go as far as saying it's a must. If you don't have it, it's good. The experience is so jarring when you don't have it that it can really, really harm your game.
Yep. Exactly. Input, it's the exact same slide. Think about input broadly. Unity does a lot to abstract it, so it makes it really easy for you to manage to do that. And the one thing that I often look at is some games, like I'm still a PC gamer. So literally like 90%, but every now and then, like I install a game and the very first thing I do is, like pick up the controller. And then I'm like, what's going on here? If you have a game where you think controller might be a nice differentiator, a nice, better experience, adding controller with Unity is so trivial that I highly recommend you make sure you try it. It's just one of those things where PC gaming is still huge. Windows Store, if you're submitting to the game to the Windows Store, it's obviously a growing market.
He's so part of the PC master race, so.
Yeah, I'm like,
I'm on the console side more than the PC side, right?
We can debate that one during the break, but it's funny. If I want to go play a game like Titanfall or something, where like, first of all, there's 16-year-old kids that come and kill me and humiliate me. Like, hey, my 10-year-old does that already. But if I can get back on the PC, I can, I can bust some doors that way.
Yeah, nice.
So it's a cheat for the old folks like me. So that's kind of where we're at. So that's it with regards to porting. I mean, it's a two-part, and that's everything you need to know. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about LightUp and other stuff, and we're going to talk about monetizing later. But when I talk to people that say, hey, what is it that I need to know, that I must know, this is it. This is exactly like those two parts is everything you need to know. We have a different runtime, and then we have to understand the hardware. The hardware is something you do everywhere, so it's not that different. The runtime is the one thing where we throw you a loop, and then you have a little bit of work to do.
Yeah, and once you walk through the runtime stuff, and like you said, the platform stuff, it's if you're building for other platforms, you're running into this anyway, so it's not like it's crazy. It's just the runtime stuff that you have to kind of watch out for. Check your plugins, run it through that Xamarin scanner. That's a really cool thing to do. You know, just pre-plan. That's, you know, basically what we're trying to get at is if you pre-plan for this, this process will be very painless, and in fact, you'll be able to do it like we do at the Porting Labs, where you'll come in at 11 o'clock, and you'll be done at 4, and you'll have your game ready to go.
Yep. So, good. I think lunch?
Yeah, I think now would be a good time to take a meal break. You know, I'm getting a little hungry. I can hear my stomach kind of growling. You guys might be picking that up on the camera now. Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll take about an hour break. I think that would be good. That'll give me some time to get some food into my system. And we'll come back and we'll keep going on. We're going to be talking some monetization as well as some light up.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. See you guys in an hour.
See you in an hour.